The next panel is our cash grain panel. On it, we have Greg Johnson of the Andersons. He's out of Champaign, Illinois. We have Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op out of Ludlow, Illinois. And we have Brian Maple of FC Stone and Company out of Indianapolis, Indiana. And they will be talking about cash grain basis for corn, beans, maybe some wheat. We might get to that as well. But before, just like we did with the soybean panel gentlemen, what I would like to do is have a 1 to 2 minute, 2 minute maybe, opening comment from each of you about, in general, what you've seen in basis over the last couple of months, and then over the next, well, we'll do a short term, and then we'll get into longer term. Short term, what do you think over the next 30 days into the planting season that basis will do for corn and soybeans? So it might be a little bit more than 2 minutes. And we'll begin with Greg Johnson of the Andersons out of Champaign, Illinois.
Thank you, Dave. I've got a couple of tidbits I wanted to start off with. U.S. biodiesel production capacity utilization has dropped to a record low 12% of total capacity, which is not a surprise. There was an Eastern Iowa biodiesel plant auctioned off last month, sold for 1% of its original construction price. Another interesting tidbit. The U.S. share of world wheat trade is now 18%. Back in the 70s, it was 50%. So this 18% is a 38-year low. So we're no longer the wheat market of the world. Why is that? Well, wheat's $4 for cash wheat, basically. But on the futures, July futures is $5. July 11 futures are $6. That's a tremendous incentive to a lot of foreign countries, Russia, Ukraine, et cetera, to grow wheat. And they are doing that. They are responding to market signals. As a result, there was a hog outfit that was able to import wheat from Russia cheaper than what they were able to buy corn in the Carolinas for. So my whole point in all this leading up to is that this is a world market, and we can't just look out our own back door that it's wet and we may not get things planted on time. These other countries are increasing their production, and we have to compete with them. What does that mean as far as profitability? I think the panel made a good point on beans this morning. We have to play defense on beans, and maybe we can't make a whole lot of money on beans, but losing a little bit or breaking even after 3 good years is better than giving a lot of it back. So let's play defense on beans. As far as corn is concerned, I think we can make money at these levels. So don't worry about how high the price is going to go. Worry about whether you can make money at these levels or not. Inputs have come down. Dease corn is $4. If that pencils out, let's take a little bit off the table. We're a cash grain panel, so we want to talk about basis levels. Soybean basis in our area is about 10 under the May futures. And I just went back and looked a little bit. Last year, we were option price the May at this time. But the previous year, we were 55 under, 40 under, 25 under the previous 5 years. So this basis level is very good on beans with poor crush margins, plants shutting down not only at Danville but also over in Indiana. They're taking some downtime for a week or two, maybe longer. It's time to lock in your basis on old crop beans. As far as corn is concerned, probably just the opposite. Due to the poor quality, corn has been moving in Jan, Feb, and March, more so than normal. As a result, if you can keep your corn, and that's a big if you can keep your corn in good condition, you will see better, much better basis levels and probably quality premiums as we get into the spring and summer months.
Bruce Bostard.
We'll start off with wheat, which is the least important of the crops that we deal with, but, I mean, we're seeing basis come in. But there's still the disconnect between the world wanting to trade wheat futures and the cash wheat market. You're still at what are historically wide basis levels on wheat, and I don't see any reason for that to tighten into a, quote, normal basis level out there. We're trading futures in the concept of wheat. We're not trading U.S. cash wheat. On soybeans, old crop soybeans, I'm offering free DP on soybeans. That tells you that I'm not really aggressive on soybean basis, and I'm not really friendly to it. At least in a rational world, you don't go out there and offer free DP if you think there's a huge amount of basis appreciation rally. Crush is down, crush margins are down, and we're seeing the transition of old crop beans from the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere. Now, a lot of times there's some fits and starts in that. I was surprised to see the amount of people that are still sitting on old crop beans when we put hands up. Now, the question of that is how much. The feeling I've been getting is that people have been good aggressive sellers of old crop beans. So although there's some out there, I don't know how much, but that's hard for us to get a handle on. Corn, I'm confused on that right now. We've seen basis improving on corn, have seen good gains on that. A wet spring, if that pans out, I'm not sure how to treat that. If the board goes up, traditionally you'd wait to see the basis down. The biggest concern I've had on old crop corn is getting the size of the crop and getting it moved in a relatively short window. And if we push harvest back by 30 days with delayed planting and see that delayed planting putting the crop in the ground from Kentucky to Minnesota in the same window, it might give us a little bit more time to get rid of this old crop and move it out. The problem there is quality issues and continues to be quality issues on, you know, can the producer or can the elevator sit on corn and hold it till August or September if we have planting delayed. The pressure is going to be from a risk reduction standpoint for us to get it shoved out the door.
Brian Maple.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time on wheat, but I will say that we start a new delivery program with the July contract to where wheat could actually become the best thing for an elevator or even you on the farm if you have enough to fill a bin to put that commodity into storage. If all of the programs get used, you're talking in excess of $1.70 a year in storage payments and carry in the marketplace. I don't think we'll use near all that, but we're looking at wider carries as the Board of Trade tries to force convergence in the cash wheat market. Enough said on that in my mind. Greg talked a little bit about the crush being down. I think that's important. Bean basis has dropped off fairly significantly in the last 2 weeks. I don't see that changing near term. It's been built around a very strong export program, and not only just the beans, but the meal export program we've had out of this country has been phenomenal this last year. And that's all starting to come to a screeching halt. We'll see those meal exports pull back. That means they don't need as many beans at the processing level. You have probably seen your best basis levels, but they're not going to get tremendously wider from where they're at today because we're moving from even to an inverse market, going into now a carry-type mode. So as long as we've got carry in the marketplace, the processor will continue to try and buy soybeans against the carry to have ownership for the domestic crush. But that's what you're going to see happen at the processing levels. It's primarily going to be crushing against what their domestic needs are. Certainly those of you in this area that are farming in this area have taken a hit with the Danville plant going down, but don't let that get you too fired up here because in the grand scheme of things, over the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen a significant upbeat in the crush side of things with like Claypool coming online. Bungie over at Morristown increased their crush. Frankfurt's increased their crush. So there's still plenty of crush out here to handle those soybeans. It's just you're going to have to haul them a little bit farther. Corn basis seems a little bit toppy to me near term. I think you could see corn basis dip a little bit over the next month, the month and a half. We're seeing a lot of corn come to the trough right now. The last 2 weeks have seen phenomenal movement of corn. I think the guys are trying to get rid of some of this high-vol, low-quality corn. If you have good quality corn, it will pay you to carry it into the summer basis-wise. I'm not going to say it will board-wise, but basis-wise, I think it'll pay you to carry that corn.
Do begin to think about your questions for this panel, and again, we'll ask you to raise your hand, and Todd will come around and bring you a microphone. The one thing that is abnormal this year, more than other years, because of the lightness of the crop, is the quality of the corn. And I wonder from a grain handler position, if you saw, for example, Brian said that, Brian said that there's been a lot of corn moving the last few weeks, bomb corn, number three corn, so on. But the suspect from the trade suspects there's still a bunch of it out there, a bunch of it. I don't know how you quantify a bunch, but it's a bunch of it. And if that corn starts coming in a glut in another 4 or 5 weeks as the temperatures warm up, what issues will that pose for you as grain handlers, and how will you actually have to react from a market standpoint to it, Greg Johnson?
Well, we have two bosses at Champaign. We have our merchandising side, who looks at the carry in the market and says, carry corn. The market is paying you to carry corn. Then we have our operations people who say, if it's going out of condition, get rid of it, because a bad crop doesn't get any better. It only gets worse. So those are the two factors that everyone, farmers and elevators, are going to have to weigh. As everyone said, if you can keep corn in condition, keep it. The market's telling you to keep it from a basis point of view. And I agree with Brian. From a futures point of view, we probably want to get it sold here in the next 30 days. But from a basis point of view, the basis should improve, because it's going to reward the people that can keep corn in good condition into the spring and summer months. So if you can keep corn in condition, the market's telling you to hold on to it.
But, Bruce, what I'm trying to get at is that you got to handle the stuff. And it might be not very good stuff to handle, and you might have a glut of it. What are you going to do with it?
This is going to be a difficult year. Normally on damage, you have enough good corn out there, enough high-quality corn out there, that you can handle some inbound damage from the farm. It's no big deal. You can blend it off in a train. They can blend it off in a barge. The market can get rid of it. The problem is, this is March, and we've been saturated with damaged corn at the export channels for months already. You've got low test weight barges, you've got high FM barges, and you've got damaged barges sitting in fleet down at the Gulf waiting for a program to blend off. You've got the market that's wanting quality corn and doesn't want to handle any more off-grade. A little over a month ago, the river houses dramatically increased their discount schedules for damaged and FM just for that reason. You could get to a point, if we see a surge out of off-quality grain, where it just gets rejected, that the traditional commercial buying channels will just plain have their belly full of it and not want to handle it. So then you start looking at salvage, junk feed, or what kind of nutrient value does it have back on the ground? Now, that's not something anybody wants to do, but in a market that's saturated with it and the end users don't want to handle it, it's going to be a problem. Ethanol plants are already fighting problems on it. The market's just saturated, and there could be a point where there's more than the market can handle. Now, you always worry about the devil you don't know rather than the devil you do. I haven't actually seen the huge amounts of inbound damage that we hear out here. We see a little bit, but not huge amounts. I think people have been very aware of coring bins and aggressive on getting it moved. Nothing would make me happier right now than if it's a problem that we anticipate and doesn't happen.
Brian Maple.
Same type of question, Dave?
Yes, sir.
I think that, in general, you're probably going to find a home for this corn at some point in time, but I'm going to take it a step further from Bruce and say that this is the time of the year that you might start to make some plans for next fall and actually give some thought to planting some short-season corn. I think there could be a chance that there'll be the best premiums of the year paid in September as we try and access new crop corn to blend with some of the old crop that we're just certain is going to come in bad. At the end of the summer, we expect some fairly heavy damage to come in. I indicated earlier that we're seeing some moisture corn come off the farm right now. If that corn gets carried into the summer, it's going to be a problem. And you would be well ahead of yourself to be out on top of that corn you've got in the bin pull a load out here or there and see what you've got out there and make sure that you don't have a quality issue, because I think it is going to be a problem on quality, on off-grade corn. The VAMO has been an issue for our feeding people, and we continue to look around for good quality corn, and there are some good premiums out here, so you may want to talk to your cash merchants about where those are at, because they're here and available to you if you have corn that's running under, say, 2 to 3 VAMO toxins.
I want to explore that short marketing season corn a little more. Greg Johnson, what do you think of that idea?
I think if you can do it, it's good. We're seeing spring planting down in Texas and Arkansas, places like that, already delayed. So we saw very good basis levels last year. I remember on beans, 1st of September, 10th of September, we were paying 70 over the November for beans. Fall basis was probably 20, 30 under. So you had an 80, 90 cent premium for early delivery beans. Of course, nobody had any that were ready. That's why there was the premium. And it's going to be the same way with corn or beans again this year. But if you are one of those, in one of those areas that's fortunate enough to get corn or beans planted early, I know there's people in Indiana, we have an elevator over there that, that traditionally gets beans early. You know, they plant beans before they plant their corn. And they're able to get those early shipment premiums. They rang the bell last year, big time. So if you can do that and you're in one of those areas, there will be premiums out there in September for early corn and beans. The trick is, are we going to be able to have anything ready in September this year or not? It's not looking very promising right now.
Is there a question out in the audience? Anybody have the microphone at the moment? No. What is... Gentlemen, what are the factors that most concern you this particular growing season from a basis standpoint? And we'll start with Bruce.
I guess from a growing season standpoint, what concerns me most right now is new crop soybeans. If we have the potential of seeing more acres than what the market's anticipating, that could provide, and a late shipping period for the South American crop where they lag over into the start of the U.S., that could see some pressure on soybean basis.
Brian?
I totally agree with Bruce on that, that if South America drags out, which I think it will, on into our new crop next year, you may want to start thinking about basis levels and getting them locked down for next fall. If you have to deliver beans at harvest time, I think that could be an issue for you. Probably the biggest concern I've got right now is logistics out of Brazil, out of the ports down in Brazil. Can they physically feed that Chinese animal out there that wants to eat very actively? If they can't, then that pulls that much more demand back to the U.S., and our carryout starts to get tighter and tighter. I take it today that they're actually meeting that demand, but it's going to be interesting to watch over the next month or so. They've got roughly 7 days of clear weather here, so there should be ample lines at the ports down there to get beans loaded, and we'll get our first real test on their logistics. But for next fall, I think if we end up planting 2 to 3 million more acres of beans, you might want to think hard about locking down basis levels for next fall.
And to follow up on that with you, Brian, the timing, what is the window for doing that, in your opinion?
I don't think I'd be in a rush to do it until I had a pretty good feel on increased acres for this next year and what does happen over the next month or so out of Brazil as to whether they can physically meet the shipment pace, because they're going to have to hit a record shipment pace that they've never seen before.
Greg Johnson.
I would agree. Bean basis could get a little bit weaker. But the flip side of that is less corn acres would mean a better basis for corn in the fall. So I would recommend an HTA on corn. Our basis in Champaign is 30 under December futures. I think we'll see it somewhere around 20 under, if not better. So it'll definitely pay to wait for that basis to improve. But you need to lock in the futures, because if you wait until fall when the basis will be better, the futures won't be over $4 at that point in time. So get your futures locked in the spring, and then wait for the basis to get better later on. With soybeans, I agree, if we plant more beans, we could see wider basis levels. On the other hand, the quick shipment premium may drag that new crop basis up a little bit. The other thing is, it doesn't take as much room to store an acre of beans as it does an acre of corn. So I can see both sides of the bean argument, so maybe do what I always do when I'm not sure, sell a little bit. So lock the basis in on a little bit on those first couple sales of new crop beans and maybe put the rest of them, leave those on an HTA.
We have a question from the audience.
Okay. The question I have is, in your particular geographic area, what kind of acreage you see, corn, soybean, increase or decrease? And also, you might comment, are you going to build more dryer capacity next year?
I guess I'll go first. I've said all along, and I've been the voice crying in the wilderness, I feel like John the Baptist, I think we're going to see more bean acres in central Illinois. And we have elevators across the Midwest, and they think I'm crazy. They think we're going to get 90 million acres of corn, 3 million more acres of corn just by snapping our fingers. Like I say, I'm not in that camp. I think we're going to see more beans, at least in central Illinois. We did not get a lot of fall field work done. Some of these larger farmers, I don't think the window's going to be big enough in March and April to get all that field work done. So I think we're going to see more beans in central Illinois. As far as drying capacity, yeah, we've got plans to gradually, over 5 or 6 years, increase. You know, we've got 10 individual dryers, maybe upgrade those 2 or 3 at a time. But this could have been a 1-in-20-year phenomenon that we don't see again, I hope, but it sure looks like we're starting off the same way. So we do have to make some plans for that.
Bruce Foster.
We had a series of focus group meetings last week, and the question came up, longer term, it looks like we're looking at increased corn acres. This year, it looks like we're looking at more bean acres than last year. And longer term, a kind of a slow, steady increase in corn acres, and it depends a lot on the soil type. I've got some areas that are more marginal dirt, and that's going to stick with the corn-bean rotation. The areas that are outstanding soil are going heavier towards corn. Dryers. We are looking at it. We put up additional dryer capacity last year. The thing is, over the last 30 years, I've needed more dumping capacity and more storage capacity every year, and I needed more drying capacity last year. So right now, the dumping and storage capacity overall wins out, as far as I'm concerned, on our planning process. That doesn't mean that we're not going to have to look at increasing. It's not as easy to increase drying capacity as you would think. You're looking at, you know, on a 5,000 to 7,000 bushel an hour dryer, places are running into constraints from the gas company just on providing the natural gas that you need. In cases you're looking at a new high pressure gas line running into town, you're looking at a couple $1 million before you even start the dryer project, just to increase gas supplies. There's infrastructure limitations we're seeing out here that the world's just not aware of. Stuff works, whether it's roads, bridges, gas lines, and electricity, and we forget about that. And when you start going in looking at expanding capacities, it can kind of be hard to pound 50 pounds into a 25-pound bag.
Ryan Maple.
Not hearing a lot on the dryer capacity. I mean, we've got people over there in Indiana that fired up dryers for the first time in a long time. We're hoping that was a one-time event, but the reality is you put dryer capacity up, and odds are you're not going to use it to the extent of the cost that it takes to put it in. So I'm not hearing a lot of extra dryer capacity. I am hearing the talk about increased bean acres. We had some significant vomitoxin problems. There's some talk that corn on corn is going to make those problems worse this next year, so we've got some guys going back to more of a normal rotation. But I'm in the camp that it all depends on what this spring is like. It's still only early March, and if planters are rolling as we get out to the middle of April, I think we could still see the corn acres come back in a lot of these areas. If you're in a 3-to-1, 4-to-1 bushel corn versus bean yields, you're going to plant corn if you can.
Are there any other questions for the panel? If there is, please raise your hand at the moment. Going once, going twice. Greg Johnson's with the Andersons out of Champaign, Illinois. Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op out of Ludlow, Illinois. And Brian Maple is with FC Stone & Company, and he is in Indianapolis, Indiana. Let's show this panel your appreciation, please.